Hi, it's me again, Olga Koch, and this is Upfront, the podcast for financial services professionals who are in it to win it. Think of me as your personal trainer. I'll help you take on the obstacles getting in the way of you and your goals. Together, we'll smash some barriers and go for gold. I know you're competitive, so tell me about some of your wins at upfront@ires.com. And if you love all this motivational talk, don't keep it to yourself. Tell your friends and colleagues and subscribe and follow Upfront wherever you're listening to this now. Data. It's a big deal. So much so that it needed its own episode. Good data, the right data, can tell you a lot. But what I'm hearing is, for a lot of businesses, data got no game. It sits on the sidelines in spreadsheets, or worse, filing cabinets. It gets duplicated, double-handled, messed about with, and can't be trusted to be one of the team. But while the financial services industry grapples with data that isn't playing ball, other industries are in a league of their own, having found ways to turn data collection and analysis into a significant competitive advantage. Data is their caffeine, their protein shake. They eat, sleep, and breathe data. Away from the office and out in the sports field, data picked up by wearable technology is giving coaches and trainers the intel to help their teams win. Sports fans are getting closer to the action with real-time statistics on their favorite teams and players. Performance analytics are fueling athletes and coaches with actionable insights to reach their peak. Could financial services do the same by being more data and tech-enabled? And if so, how do businesses get off the starting block and get their data really working for them? You know I like to kick things off with an upfront question. So today, I'm taking one for the team by asking, can data help financial services get to the top of their game? I'm joined by Adir Schiffman, former surgeon and now executive MD of global wearable sports tech company Catapult Sports, and Andrew Walsh, CEO of financial technology company IRES, to find out. Andrew and Adir, let's cut to the chase. Can data get financial services to the top of their game?
Oh, there are financial services businesses where data is already putting them at the top of the game, and there are lots of others that's not the case. But it's not data alone. It also needs to think about what the consumer experience is. So data, yes, mandatory requirement, but it's not data alone.
I agree with Andrew in a lot of ways. I think that it's not just data itself. Firstly, it needs to be high quality and accurate data. You know, I find myself constantly telling people, in many ways, no data is better than wrong data because at least you know your limitations. So it needs to be high quality and accurate data. And then it's what you do with the data. The data is just the starting point for intelligence, effectively, and insights. And so I think it can make a material difference to the financial services industry. And as Andrew said, it already is. But it's all about quality of data and then the insights and actions that you glean from it.
Okay, so a lot of people struggle to get their heads around data because there can be so much of it. As you mentioned, it's not always of the highest quality. They often don't know where to start. So I want to start by hearing your elevator pitches, let's say for good data. You've got 20 seconds to convince us why data is so important. Adir?
I think I can lose less than 20 seconds. So what you have as an individual is effectively your intelligence and your experience, and that's the basis of decision-making. And if you want to only have that, then you're welcome to it. But I'd rather have a layer of intelligence, high quality intelligence, that is external to the intelligence between my ears that will augment my decision making. And I would welcome any competitor that feels differently, because I think it is just such an enormous competitive advantage to have that objective perspective.
Andrew?
Data helps everyone make better decisions. And, you know, not only what has happened, but what might happen. And having data to make better decisions helps you solve problems. There is definitely an element of taking emotion out of decision-making when you can base it on data, and it shouldn't take the fun away, but I think it's a better basis for decision-making, and it's relevant in business, relevant to each of us personally, for sure.
I feel like we're going head-to-head despite agreeing on almost everything, Andrew. It's like data version of the voice. I'm waiting for someone to turn around and choose one of us based on our responses. I think we're in violent agreement on this topic.
Yeah.
So, Andrew, tell us about your experiences with financial services and data. So where is the industry at data-wise, and what frustrates you in what you're saying?
I think that it's a story of two worlds. Institutionally, at the sophisticated end of financial markets, there is oodles of data. There is most things happen in financial services at a computer, and that relies on data. What happens in consumer-facing applications is very different. Consumer-facing experiences are siloed. There isn't sufficient quality of data, as Adir mentioned. There isn't reuse of that data, and data is often a second-class citizen. So that difference means consumers lose out and creates opportunity for people to solve that problem. My frustration in financial services is there's so much hype and there are base requirements not there to support what that hype potential might look like. That includes data quality that we spoke about, data strategy and data protection. I think people can get so fixated on one of those and not all of those. And the most important thing is there's no end-to-end tie-up between having the data, then doing something with it, and then what does it mean for a consumer? So separate systems, separate data stores often translates to manual experiences for the consumer. And that's my personal frustrations, my business frustration. And I can understand why, but I don't think that consumers aren't accepting the basis for that.
And do you feel like the more data-centric and sort of personalized and catered other apps and other services become, consumers become more and more aware of the fact that financial services aren't using that data in the same way?
100%. If you apply for a new product, 10 times out of 10, you probably have to fill in separate data. And you can't reuse the data that's already at the institution. And I can justify why from the inside out, but from as a consumer on the outside, I can't understand it at all.
Adir, do you agree with this? And Adir, as a person who's outside of this industry, what's your experience and observation?
I completely agree. And so, you know, I've got some insight into this industry. And I know there's one bank I know of in particular that has effectively 21 different windows that they would need to open to see all of a customer's data across all of the elements. And so, you know, that's largely, you try to hide that below the waterline from the customer. I think the challenge for a customer is absolutely what Andrew said. Like, we've moved into a world now where every single company, whether they deal with consumers or with businesses, frankly, is expected to have like a nice, shiny user interface and user experience at the front. There is no mercy anymore. And so, you know, when you are a customer of a bank, let's say, and there's a particular individual and maybe they've had a home loan for 5 or 6 years with that bank and they want to take out a credit card, that bank knows more about the financial condition of that customer than probably the customer knows and understands about themselves. The fact that you need to re-enter any data in that situation is a direct consequence, exactly as Andrew said, of the siloing of this. And so I think, you know, what has exposed this has been this rise of fintechs, which is, in a way, it's like really unfair because fintechs come to the party. They generally have one product or two products. They don't have a silo or any kind of long-term legacy that they have to deal with. They don't have, you know, billions of dollars of tech debt that they're wading through. And so what they go and do is they put a nice front end on something that's effectively a one or two product show. And they start making everybody look bad. And so, and it's not unique to financial services, by the way. If you look at Flybys, like, God knows the information that Flybys has about me. But whilst God might know, I don't know, because it's not used to target anything towards me. So it's not unique. It's not unique to financial services, but I think it is a problem. And it is a vulnerability that legacy institutions and providers have relative to fintechs that are coming through. So I'm generally not a believer in the imminent and complete disruption of legacy financial institutions. I think, you know, at one stage, I was in a boardroom of a large financial services business and doing a Q&A on tech. And someone said, you know, they say turning a large legacy financial services business is like turning an aircraft carrier. And I said, well, my question in that situation is, why the hell are you trying to turn the aircraft carrier? Just fire all of your weapons. And so I think that they do have these particular advantages, but it's just a matter of using them. And my advice to them is you start with the smallest granule of the data that you have to show the customer that you have something. And that itself will knock their socks off. I don't think you need to try and, you know, drink from the fire hose of data as a first step as a financial institution.
The big difference is that existing businesses have clients.
That's right.
And that's what new entrants don't have, and they're really expensive to acquire. There is a whole heap of data, but I think that there's a temptation for people to use data and give data literally. I don't want to know what I spent my money on. I don't want to know how much is in my account. But I want insights, and I want to know how that data and how those spending habits translate to better things. And that might be unrelated to just telling me what my budget or my spending was last month, but it might know that I've got a utility bill and out in the market for people like me that I can get different kinds of products cheaper or better outcomes. And I think that when the data is used to tip into real life as opposed to staying captured in data, then we end up getting different conversations with consumers and different outcomes and better engagement.
The issue here is not having data, it's probably knowing what is the right data to be using in the right quantities to improve that customer experience, which ultimately the customer, I mean, they basically want to be richer. That's what the customer of a financial Yep. services business wants. And so the question is, what data will lead to some kind of information or advice that will make them richer? And I think that many stones are still have not been, still remain unturned in that space.
What data actually translates to is a more efficient operation inside financial services, but it also means ease. It's actually about ease and taking friction away. What you get is where you don't have data and you don't have data stitched up between different parts is friction. And that's what people hate. And that's why people will make decisions between financial institutions. And the most obvious example is where things aren't digitized. And so if you get somewhere in a process where you're printing paper, that was ludicrous. It is more ludicrous post this pandemic and is not survivable, in my view.
Are there any other roadblocks that you see for the optimal use of data, whether it's customer trust or regulation or ethics?
I'll make a one-liner, Andrew, and you know, you'll have more insight into this. But I think the fine line you walk as a financial institution is wanting to give people these aha moments that help them increase their wealth without freaking them out about how much information you actually know about them. That's the fine line, I think, in financial services.
Consumers do trust financial services to keep their data safe and their information safe. And so there is huge leverage to be made from that aspect of trust that consumers have in financial services. They certainly don't trust Facebook in the same way as they trust a bank. But there are technology providers that have experiences and trust that I think are real dangers. And the way that people trust Apple, for example, is quite different to other tech providers and probably quite different to financial services businesses. So I think that there is something to be leveraged there. There is a level of trust and safety. There is an existing client base. It is about digitizing and changing that experience.
I mean, data security and ethics, you know, you think you've got problems in financial services, like Catapult collects biometric data about player performance. And so fundamental to those players and teams being comfortable with us collecting that information and being a repository of that information is confidence about how we're going to store that and confidence about how we're going to use it and how we're going to share it and more particularly not share it. And so it's taken us a long time, or it took us a long time, to deliver confidence to the mainstream teams and players, athletes, etc., about that. And, you know, that was not a simple process. And you have things, you know, you have various requirements in financial services. And for biometric data, you have things like HIPAA compliance, which is a high bar that you need to get over. And so, you know, I completely agree. Doing nothing with the data is preferable to doing something that freaks everybody out or results in a breach of trust. But, you know, Andrew, it's interesting you say that, mention Apple. So I have an iPhone and I use like Apple Pay extensively. And I mean, they know a lot of stuff about me from my payment history, and I haven't seen them doing anything smart or impressive with the data. Effectively, it just sits there, and the closest they get to anything is a transaction summary. So I think, you know, it's easy to criticize banks and other financial institutions, but, you know, this is big tech at the cutting edge of like global innovation. And like they're not blowing me away as a customer either. Now, it might be a strategic decision to like gently walk on and crush the toes of the bank one step at a time or one toe at a time. But, you know, I haven't been particularly impressed with anything that they've done.
Hold up. God's love calling. Ring, yeah. Ring. Hello? Oh, you want to know about the softer side of Adir and Andrew? Okay, let me see what I can do. You can track people's heart rates and how many steps they take in a day, but can you track what makes their heart skip a beat? or what really gets their pulse racing. Adir and Andrew, I want you to think about the last time your heart skipped a beat. What made that happen? Connect to those feelings for a moment and talk to me about what you love about financial services.
The last thing that made my heart skip a beat was the experience I just went through then with the appearance of music and thinking I've walked into a different podcast. That's all right. It's coming back below 100 now, so that's good. You know, I'm going to go a long way back and talk about the last thing I thought was amazing in terms of data and financial services. And that was, I think it was probably in the 2000s. And it was the first time I came across effectively an account aggregator app where you could go and, at the time, probably in breach of all of the terms and conditions of every financial institution, provide your username and password into this centralized aggregation app. And it wasn't even an app then, it was on a website. And what that would do is give you a view of all of your information across all of the different service providers that you use, whether it's different banks and broking offerings or financial advice, credit cards. And so for me, you know, I'm still waiting for that to come back. It disappeared after, it kind of ran out of steam. But I remember feeling like, oh, this is the moment in time at which I'm not going to have to search through a whole range of different locations to look at all of my financial information, and it will finally come together and provide me with some good information in a harmonized way. And unfortunately, it didn't materialize. But you know, I was very hopeful back then. It was probably the mid-2000s.
Andrew, do you have something you love about financial services?
I have lots of things that I love about financial services. And so I thought the music was going somewhere else and probably glad that it didn't. I think that what I can do with some providers on my phone is pretty damn impressive. And I don't carry a wallet anymore. I don't need to use a computer when I don't have to. And there are some experiences where they're complete on the phone. And so that is probably less about the heart skip moment, but certainly just really easy. And the contrast is really probably what makes my heart skip. When I have to go back and step into another century and interact in ways that are just so inconsistent. And so it's probably heart skip, not in a positive way, but in that contrast of, man, does that still happen?
I totally agree with you though. Like, the problem that the financial services industry has is that there's been this gradual improvement over the course of two decades, where the way that you engage with financial services today, if you would have done it all in one hit, nobody could have dealt with it. It would have just been completely mind-blowing that I can go and do banking online and money is transferred instantly, and I can pay via NFCs without having to have a wallet, and I can buy and sell shares, and it all happens in real time and for virtually no cost. But because it's all happened so gradually, it's just become part of life. And I think, as you were speaking, Andrew, I thought, wow, like, I realize how much I've just taken the last 20 years for granted.
It's a bit like a boiling frog, and sometimes innovation is celebrated too much, and an incremental change is masked as innovation.
I went on a road trip of America, and I live in London, and the fact that you still need to sign checks in America blew my mind.
Madness. And you have businesses like Square that were invented down the road, and you're still signing either on paper or these electronic tablets, and you can't, maybe it's different now in the last couple of years, but you can't even tap.
No.
What's going on there? The other thing that I can get frustrated in a consumer experience, and this somewhere ties back to technology and data, is the time it takes to move money. And so it is unfathomable that even within one institution that you can't move money. So my encouragement to people I talk to around these topics is go and open an account, go and open an experience with someone else and understand what good looks like to challenge what status quo is. Because unless you can see what's possible, it can be really hard to make change.
We all have something that raises our blood pressure. What makes yours spike? What one thing do you want financial services to break up with for good?
Paper. Get rid of the paper. Don't tell me that I need to prove who I am by using a pen. I don't do it elsewhere. It's just not the case. Break up with paper.
I completely agree with that. You know, I don't think I've signed a physical document in the last 2 years, and I don't think I ever will again. It's all moved to electronic signatures. In fact, when I authenticate travel documents, I can authenticate them remotely without physically signing anything. And yet, I completely agree, like this idea of having to provide 100 points of ID physically and signing, and it's a pretty bizarre situation that we're still stuck in. You know, it feels like the 20th century, basically.
One of the really interesting spaces is what crypto has done. And there's a whole world of what it means as an investment class or a bet or digital currency. But the kinds of experiences that you can progress through by opening wallets and the real-time nature of getting money and funding accounts and then buying these things 24/7 really starts to challenge how things are stitched together, what they are, concepts of money. And I think that is probably going to be defining from here. And that is all about these things we've been talking about, the use of data, the connectedness, the experience and the tech.
I tell you what I think would be a good use of data. Like when we interact with financial services, we all make decisions about, you know, this, I'm talking particularly transactionally, but not only transactionally, we all make decisions from time to time that are pretty dumb. And the less sophisticated you are with financial services, the more frequent the dumb decisions are. And so they're nobody's fault. It's just that people are not across exactly how financial services work. And all I want is for a bank to say to me or any financial institution to say, you know how you just did that way? That's not the best way to do this. It will be much more efficient and much cheaper for you if you just do this. And we notice that this seems to be happening a lot with your account. So next time, how about we just get you to do it this way and you won't incur fees or the money will move faster or whatever it is. Instead of giving me the sinking feeling that whenever I do something dumb and incur a fee, somebody in the back room just like popped a cork somewhere that this sucker just incurred another fee with the institution, you know? I think that trying to help customers, because for me, you know, you have these moments where you get surprised by the way someone's behaved because it's contrary to what you might expect. So, you know, I don't know, like a parking inspector that puts money in your expired meter would be a good example of that. And I think financial services have got this reputation of fee gouging, etc. And whether it's valid or invalid, it doesn't matter. They've got this reputation. And I think them proactively saying, we want to reduce your fees or we want to make things smoother for you, in much the same way as Netflix went through this period where they said, we're going to go and approach all of the people that haven't had utilization activity for an extended period and terminate their payments to stop them spending money they probably don't know they're spending. I think that would be a good use of data in financial services.
That sounds great. That sounds like a lot of goodwill from financial services. So to change gears quickly, Adir, your business Catapult is doing some seriously sexy stuff with data. Can you tell us more about it? You've already touched upon it a little bit, but we'd love for you to expand.
Yeah, so we are all about trying to maximize the performance of athletes and teams. And so we do that by capturing our own data. So, you know, we were probably best known originally for inventing this unique kind of wearable technology that players wear in a garment on their back while they're playing, while they're training. It captures 1,000 data points a second, and it gives this fantastic data that eventually becomes predictive on their risk of injury or how to train them to maximize performance at the right time in the season or the right time in their careers. And we've now combined that with a whole lot of video data that we ingest into our software platform that enables you know, some pretty interesting things, like if you see that a player on the video really messed something up, you can go back into the data and try to understand what were their biometric markers of performance at that moment. Like, were they just not trying? Were they too tired? Because, you know, once you get tired, skills execution goes down the drain. And, you know, recently we bought a business called SBG that is the number one provider of really data technology across Formula One, which is the most data intensive sport by a significant margin. And just watching the nature of the data that's captured and the degree of that capture and how it's utilized is incredible. And, you know, after we acquired it, someone said to me, there must be a lot of data captured in F1 cars. Like, does every tire have a sensor on it? And I said, no, every tire has 12 sensors on it. And so just watching the impact that data has in a sport like Formula One, where, you know, part of that race is about how good the driver is at executing their skill set, but at least 50% of winning versus losing is understanding the data coming off the machine, when to make certain decisions, and literally using the software to predict likely race outcomes based on different decision-making, pitting or changing ratios or whatever it might be. So it's there is no doubt that deep, high-quality streams of data with what we might call, you know, predictive and prescriptive analytics, that is the future of sport. What's exciting for us now is to bring that down to the consumer level so that, you know, when I go and, you know, play soccer socially or play tennis and I wear this technology, it starts providing me with, you know, very interesting and actionable and quite depressing insights. So so that's really what's exciting, to start bringing that down to consumers as well.
Adir, what kind of data is secret to a team, and what is it for the benefit of fans? On F1, you can see real-time, lots of real-time information, and cycling is now starting that. You don't see it in some of the field games, but do you see that happening in the future?
So I think, you know, the two kinds of data that won't make their way to viewers, and let's say to viewers and competitors, other teams. One is, you know, all of the personal information about the performance of athletes, especially down at biometric level. Like, there's a very high degree of sensitivity, as there should be, about that type of information. And so, you know, we did have some data in a State of Origin game at one stage on the Telstra tracker, we called it, they sponsored it. Jonathan Thurston taking a kick that was very important, and his heart rate was displayed. He's happy to have it done. And what was remarkable is he watched his heart rate come down just before he took the kick, and the ability to mentally control his own biological behavior is quite remarkable. So that's one kind. The other kind, you know, is going to sound a bit strange, but almost everything else, because most of the data that is collected for teams to make decisions really is not interesting for the viewer. And the way that I think about it is, like, data itself is boring. What's interesting is the narratives and the stories that you build based on that data. And so what I think you'll see from a fan point of view is just increasing sophistication at telling stories that originate with unique data. I think that that's what's exciting in the future for fans.
So a fan will look at data and be really interested in it, and they'll be quite technical in understanding yards gained or some of these F1 stats. When that same person then thinks about data in financial services, the heart probably slows down a lot as well before they do that.
I guess so.
So what's the difference? Because it's the same kind of drive that goes to helping someone understand what's going on, but is it because it hasn't been enlivened by the people that have that data to give back to the consumer? Is it not personalized enough? Is it not interesting? What's the difference?
Yeah, I think there's a storytelling problem. I mean, if you look at the data coming out of financial services, it's largely numbers. And so that's ultra dry. I mean, you could have, I mean, maybe there's a reality show calling to watch the richest people in the world making financial decisions to become even bigger billionaires in real time and streaming that data to fans. But I think that, you know, when you log into any financial institution, if they do provide information about your behavior, then there's no compelling story. And so, you know, what you start seeing from our data in sports is that you might see, in the NFL, for example, or let's say college football. So you have like scrimmage lines, and then you see the play start, and maybe you'll see a particular route that they're running. And then we'll overlay on top of that some characteristics about what the players did. So the simplest one would be velocity, for example. Speed, might look at acceleration. More interesting would be like lateral movement. And so it's giving you some context, because what you might see is that a wide receiver like outrunning a cornerback, and then you see their relative velocities, and you see, oh, I see, that guy's never going to be catching him. Like, there's too much of a gap there. And that's a story to tell, which is, this guy is so special. I mean, I could tell you even more special would be a wide receiver that had very rapid lateral acceleration. That's what's really valuable as a wide receiver. So that's a story that you start telling about why people are special. I don't think that when you look at information that and data around financial behavior, there are no stories being told. And so I think, you know, for me, I would bring creative people into the organization and say, What do you wish you could tell the consumer to make their lives better? Okay, we'll try and figure out the data that would enable you to tell that story, as opposed to having like a solution in search of a problem, which I think a lot of data is.
So do you think that the compliance and the regulations are the things that actually get in the way there? You spoke about a bunch of rules that govern how you manage data and the biometric aspects. Do you think that is the reason that it's not possible to leverage the data in similar ways?
I think it's a narrative problem. There's this hesitancy to say, because, there's a large percentage of the population, I mean, you would know this, that is not very sophisticated in the ways of making money and investing. And really, there are a limited number of ways for them to improve that sophistication. They can read some books or go to a financial planner if they find a good one. But actually, you have these financial institutions that have all of this information about the customer and a depth of sophistication about how to do better with your money. And I think that they're just, personally, if I was running a financial institution, my appetite would be much more customer centricity in the truest sense by saying, what's the real solution that every customer wants from their financial institution? Make more money. Okay, let's help you make decisions that over the long term will make you richer than you otherwise would have been. That's how I think about it. And so data is perfect for that.
Yeah, and they need more data. And people will share more data if they're getting something back.
Absolutely.
Right? And so one of the things you said earlier about data quality, and it's better to have wrong data but know it, the more you can give away to get richer data, the more you can personalise, the more you can actually give those insights. And I'm not sure that there's enough thinking about what you give away in order to get richer from the institution's point of view as well as the consumer.
Yeah, I think that institutions often, I've had quite a bit of experience with financial institutions, and my experience with them is that often their starting point is to be product-centric in the way they think, and so they talk about home loans, they talk about mortgages, and then their increase in customer centricity started calling them home loans. There was this increase in customer centricity. But really, what the long-form version of a mortgage is I really need to buy a house to live in. I like that house a lot, but I can't afford to buy that house. You buy that house for me, and I'll figure out a way of paying you back. I mean, that's a mortgage. And so I think that there is so much data you could use to help people make good decisions about that. And instead what happens is it becomes a race to the bottom on interest rates or fees or whatever it might be. And I always think when price becomes the differentiator, it's because market participants have commoditized the offering. And that is true not in financial services. It's universally true. And so whenever you see institutions competing on price, which is rate, fees, whatever it might be, you know that they have done a very poor job at engaging the customer on the fundamental benefits that they're selling.
Finally, Andrew and Adir, what advice do you have for financial services businesses to help them address their immediate data challenges and bring their A game?
It's definitely being set up for success. Don't stress about shiny toys. Consider what's needed end to end. Start small, focus on quality. Do something with the end in mind.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a similar view. Like at the moment, most of the focus seems to be on the risk represented by the data that these financial institutions are holding. And that's understandable. We spoke about that. But I think the key is to say, let's have a blank sheet of paper. What benefits would we love to give to the customer to knock their socks off? Okay, we've probably already got the data to be able to deliver that. So let's start trying to use the data for those purposes and thinking of the solution first. That would be my advice to financial institutions.
I want to thank Adir Schiffman and Andrew Walsh for all of that sexy talk about data. If you want to know more about Adir and Andrew and how you can start loving data in your business, check the link to the Upfront blog in our podcast notes. How do you use data in your job? Spill the tea at upfront@irs.com. If this episode got the blood pumping through your veins and feeling amped up and ready to make some changes, subscribe and follow Upfront and thank me later. Next time, it's all about non-obvious thinking. You're going to want to hear about that. Obviously.